Last week we ended off on a cliffhanger about Shitas Ramban. Specifically, we were left with a number of questions. The Ramban in Drashas Taras Hashem Tamima explicitly rejected Rambam's view insofar as Rambam maintained that miracles were exceptional and generally nature is operational, whereas Ramban in Bereishis Yod Ches and in his commentary on Iov seems to endorse this very view that he rejects within Rambam. Moreover, the Ramban in Bo and in Drashas Taras Hashem Tamima writes that someone who accepts nature has no portion in the Torah of Moshe, whereas again the Ramban in Bereishis Yod Ches, in Perush Al Iov, as well as in other places, explicitly states that only the tzaddik who constantly cleaves to Hashem is entirely protected from Teva, and he seems to endorse the view of Rambam in 3:17, 18, and 3:51. I didn't say enough to ask a question.
Oh, I'm just trying to understand something that you said last week.
No, that's from last week. Ask after question. So, before attempting to resolve these questions, let's note that the Ramban, even in the more limited capacities like Bereishis Yod Ches and Iov, also is quite different than the Rambam. For example, the Ramban makes clear that the protection of the tzaddik, again, even when he says that only the tzaddik has this special level of shmira, is supernatural. V'yishtamer mehem b'neis yaseh lo tamid. It's a constant miracle. And this differs from the Rambam's view, who, as we saw, seems to maintain that the absolute protection that the tzaddik experiences is more naturalistic. So, if you recall, we saw that the Rambam writes that the tzaddik will be saved from the shipwreck by God's granting him awareness that the ship should not be boarded, whereas Ramban would say that even if the tzaddik does board that ship, Hashem will miraculously prevent it from sinking. Moreover, so that's difference number one. In other words, even though both Ramban and Rambam both say that the chassid is constantly protected, however, the nature of that protection is different. However, we still have the problem, and this might explain the first question we raised today, namely, how could the Ramban say that the Rambam is absolutely wrong and still distinguish between the chassid and the regular person? However, the second point still is a problem, meaning to say, how could the Ramban acknowledge that regular people are subject to Teva if Ramban also says that anyone who believes in Teva is no chelik in Taras Moshe? Before we answer that, let's look at another difference between Ramban and Rambam, which I think reflects the same point. Take a look at the Ramban in Devarim, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Gimel, which you have Dvarim Yud Aleph Yud Gimel, top of 31. So the Ramban there just mentions that it's not just tzaddikim or chassidim that are subject to this special hashkacha, but also rishayim gemurim. Ki Hashem lo yase nisim tamid laseis metar haaretz b'chol eis yorel malkosh ulosif b'degan v'sirosh v'yitzhar ulaharbos gam ha'esev b'adeliv heima o shi'atzor ha'shamayim v'yevoshu rak al maaseh rov ha'am, meaning to say that we'll see this a little later today. The Ramban in Bukhukosai explains that when the entire nation acts righteously, so then the nation as a whole will be subject to special providence. There will be peace and prosperity, rain and dew, as the Psukim explain. That's with respect to the nation, when the nation acts righteously, but not with respect to an individual. Aval yachid hu bizmano yachia, uva'avono v'hu ba'avono yamos. So an individual will live due to his righteousness and die due to his wickedness. V'nei amar, ki ba'asosam kol ha-mitzvos me'ava shlema yaseh ma'am kol ha-nisim ha'ilu l'tova. When a nation does all the mitzvos with love, so then Hashem will do these nisim to them for good. V'amar, ki ba'avdam ha-vodazor yaseh imahem os l'ra'a. And likewise the reverse, if the nation serves Avodah Zarah, so once again, God's hand will be expressed supernaturally in terms of punishing the Jewish nation. The curses that are described in the Tochacha in both Vayikra and Devarim also are a clear manifestation of God's hand. Now, we'll see later, is that a nes nistar or is it a nes nigla? On the one hand, it's like a nes nistar because it's not like the 10 plagues. Rather, it's rain and dew and the like. It's not like the plants grow without rain. However, it's also like a nes nigla because since it happens in such a predictable way, so frequently, then that is natural. In other words, you know, if there's one or two good years for the crops, so that could be nature. But if there's consistent growth that's associated with Shmiras Torah mitzvos, so then that's clearly supernatural. Vida ki anisim lo yasu letova o lera'a. But when it comes to individuals, so then nisim, both for good or bad, are only performed rak letzadikim gemurim o lerishayim gemurim, only for tzadikim gemurim or rishayim gemurim. Aval habenonim kederach minago shel olam yaseh bam tova o ra'a kedarkam ukealilosam. However, when it comes to benonim, so then through the means of darko shel olam or minhago shel olam, so then Hashem does good to them or bad to them, depending on what they deserve. So the notion that Rishoyim Gemurim are also subject to a higher level of Ashkacha would be inconceivable for the Rambam. Why? Because again, the Rambam maintains that the protection afforded to Hasidim is naturalistic, a direct consequence of their attachment to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Well, if that's true, then there'd be no reason to assume that Rishayim Gemurim would also be Zochet to this high level of Hashgacha. Whereas, because the Ramban maintains that this is fundamentally supernatural, so then, just as there is a specific reason for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to shower Tzadikim Gemurim with a special Hashgacha, so too, there's a specific reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu would shower Rishayim Gemurim with a special Ashkacha. Well, why is that? Why would Rishayim Gemurim have this high-level Ashkacha? So it could be for a couple of reasons. Number one, the Gemara in Erchin that we mentioned a couple of weeks ago on Tazayin Amud Beis. So Rabbi Yishmael said, anyone who kol she'avru alav arm yom below Yisurim, ki belolamo. Anyone who has 40 days without any type of Yisurim, even the small types of Yisurim, like putting your hands in your pocket and getting the wrong change. So he's received all of his olam, meaning to say he won't have olam haba. Now why is that? Because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects a person even from these minor inconveniences in life, it's because he is trying to ensure that they get their deserts, they get the schar that they deserve for their good deeds in this world, and therefore they won't be rewarded, they'll have no more merits to be rewarded in Olam Haba. Therefore, the Gemara says, someone who experiences no Yisurin at all in life, or even for 40 days, should get nervous. So that's one reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have this Hashkacha, even the Shmira, for Rishayim to ensure that they get their reward in this world. Now, I want to mention a parenthetical point here about this Gemara, which is that this doesn't seem very fair. Right? The Gemara in Brachos Zayin Amud Aleph says that Moshe Rabbeinu asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu about Tzadik V'Tovlo, Tzifaralo Rasha V'Tovlo, and the Gemara answers, Kel Emunah V'Ein Avel, Kel Emunah, Kashem She Nifrayim Min HaRishayim Li'Olam Haba, Afiu Al Avera Kala She'osim, Kach Nifrayim Min HaTzadikim, Ba'Olam Hazeh Al Avera Kala She'osim. Vein avel, kashem shemishal min schar l'tzadikim l'olam haba, afilu al mitzvah kala she'osin, kach mishal min schar rishayim b'olam hazeh, afilu al mitzvah kala she'osin. So, the Gemara tells us that the explanation for the problem of the righteous suffering, the wicked prospering, is that the righteous that prosper in this world are being rewarded for the good deeds that they may have done. They're not a rasha gamur. And likewise, the tzaddik that suffers in this world is because he's not a tzaddik gamor, he's done some averos for which he needs to get punished. Now, maybe next week we'll talk about Ramban Shita in terms of tzaddik viralo, and there's more to it than this. This is not the whole story, as evidenced from the fact that even after Moshe Rabbeinu was told this answer, many Nevi'im continued to ask the question. Yirmiyahu asks, Madua derech Rishayim Salecha? If Moshe's answer was the whole story, then why did he continue to ask the question? So we'll talk about that Be'ez Hashem next week perhaps, but the problem I want to deal with here is a little different, which is that this isn't fair, meaning to say, if a Rasha does a mitzvah, he should be zocha to good reward. We know that Yafesha achas ba'olam haba yoser than all of the pleasure in this world. So isn't it unfair that the Rasha would get his reward in this world? After all, he did a mitzvah, he deserves reward, and so why should he be rewarded in this world? So the Ramban actually addresses this point as well in Vayikra Yurches Pasuk Dalad, and he answers that a person is rewarded based off of the form, or in the form, in the manner that he desires to be rewarded. So the tzaddik's greatest delight is spiritual, and thus he's rewarded with spiritual reward, that is olam haba. The rasha is olam hazeh focused. He's motivated by pleasure in this world. Accordingly, he is rewarded through pleasure in this world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a person what he wishes, what he longs for, what he strives for. So that's one reason why the Rasha Gamor might have this higher level of Hashkacha in this world. Another reason is because the...
Who says this, by the way?
Mistamad is what the Ramban means.
Right.
Another reason is because the higher level of providence experienced by the Rishayim Gemurim is a reflection of the fact that some individuals play a outsized role in the fulfillment of God's plan in the world. One of the important things, I think we referred to this at some point earlier this year, is the notion that though HaKadosh Baruch Hu grants Bechira Chashis, and he allows people to make their own choices, and he responds based off of the decisions that they have made, but there's also a general plan and a goal and direction in history. What the Ramchal calls Hanhagas HaYichud, whereby HaKadosh Baruch Hu guides the world to a specific path and a trajectory, ultimately Vayashem L'melech HaKol HaAretz Vayom HaVi Hashem Echad Shmo Echad. Now if that's true, so then even though both forms of Hanhagos are always there, and there always is bechira. Nevertheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will intervene in to a greater degree at certain points and for certain people to ensure that his plan is carried out. And that even includes intervention in a way that might affect their decision-making process. Did we talk about this? No? Okay. Just give one example in Ramban, and we'll see how that explains this as well. The Ramban deals with the issue of how is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can harden Paro's heart. After all, that would seem to be a contradiction of Paro's free will. So one answer that the Ramban cites at first and agrees that this is true, but he adds to it, is the Ramban's answer that though generally speaking a person has free will, if a person sins in a particularly egregious manner, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu could take away that freedom. And thus, Paro initially acted volitionally. He freely chose to enslave the Jewish people, to murder them, and even his initial refusal to allow them to leave during the first five plagues was free. It's only after the first five plagues that his heart was hardened. So because he had sinned in such an egregious manner, his bechira was taken away. One could add, perhaps, that this is mida keneged mida. Paro hardened his own heart during the first five plagues. He refused to acknowledge that which was patently obvious. Anybody who was reasonable after seeing Dam, Svardeya, Kinim, Arov, Dever would surely have conceded that this is Yad Hashem and that the right thing to do is to listen and allow the Jewish people to go. What does the Pasuk say? He hardened his heart. He refused to listen. He refused to acknowledge that which was clear. And therefore, since he didn't take advantage of the gift of freedom, so Mida Keneged Mida, that gift of freedom was taken away. And that's the view of the Rambam. But then the Rambam adds another factor, which is that the truth is, there's really a number of parts to this answer. One part is that in a certain sense, Hashem didn't take away his freedom. Rather, the Makos were taking away his freedom. The pressure of the plagues were going to force Paro to release the Jews, not because he wanted to release them, but mitoch kovet ha-makos, not leman shemo, not lechavod Hashem, but because he felt compelled. So in a certain sense, God gave him the power, the strength, like it says, vayechazek Hashem es libo, he gave strength to his heart to allow him to withstand the pressures of the plagues and thereby carry out what he really wished to do, which was to continue to enslave them. But the Ramban adds to that. It's not just that. Ramban says that the Yesod is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a goal and a purpose, this we referred to last week, in Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that was to unambiguously show his existence, his hashkacha, to the entire world in a way that was clear for all to see, like it says with respect to the Makos, Laman Teidun Ki Ani Hashem, Laman Teidun Ki Ani Hashem B'Karav Haaretz, to show I exist, to show that there's Hashgacha, Laman Teidun Ki Ein Kamoni B'Chol Haaretz, that there's no other power besides God. That was the goal of the Makos. And it was to, that Kiddush Hashem could have been carried out in one of two ways. Either, the Ramban says, with Paro, the most powerful king in the world, refusing to listen to God's request and being pounded over the head until he has to let them go, and that would show God's power and providence and the like. Or alternatively, Paro releasing the Jewish people, Leman Shemo, Lechvod Hashem, in order to fulfill and listen to God's will. And with the most powerful king in the world humbling himself before HaKadosh Baruch Hu willingly, that too would have caused that same requisite Kiddush Hashem. The plan would have been carried out. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu had the plan. What's the plan? To show his existence to the world in this clear and unambiguous way. Through Nisim Geluyim. That's the purpose of Nisim Geluyim, the Nisim Geluyim of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that plan of Kiddush Hashem could have been carried out either way. Power's freedom was maintained in the sense that he could choose between right or wrong. Right would have been to free them l'chvod Hashem. Wrong would have been to say no and be pounded into a pulp and then having to let them go. Both ways would have made that Kiddush Hashem. However, a third option, which would have been to release them mitoch kovet amakos after five plagues, would not have been a fulfillment. That would not have been a reflection of that requisite Kiddush Hashem. And therefore, that option was taken away. So he had true freedom in the sense that he could choose between good and evil. But at the same time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan of publicizing his name in the world was going to be carried out either way and regardless. Now, if that's true, so then we understand why sometimes with respect to Rishayim Gemurim, in this case Paro, there is a need for a higher level of Hashgacha, because that higher level of Hashgacha is necessary for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to carry out his plan. In this particular instance, it was the Kiddush Hashem of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So again, the Ramban told us that Tzadikim Gemurim and Rishayim Gemurim are Zocha to this higher level of Hashgacha. And the reason is because there's a particular reason why Tzadikim Gemurim and Rishayim Gemurim need a higher level of Hashgacha, whereas Beinonim are not subject to this higher level of Hashgacha. Now, this point, though, right, and therefore Beinonim are subject more to Minhago Shel Olam. Now, the point that we're bringing out from here is that this, even though Ramban and Rambam both distinguish between the Chassid and the Beinoni, but this distinction between putting the Chassid and the Rasha, the Tzaddik Gamor and the Rasha Gamor, sort of in that same plane, would make no sense according to the Rambam's naturalistic perspective on Hashgacha, but makes a lot of sense according to Ramban's perspective of Hashgacha, that Hashgacha is in fact miraculous and not naturalistic. Oh. So now, though, we have to get back to our second question. Again, what was our first question? Our first question was that in Drashas Taras Hashem Tamima and in Shmos Yud Beis, Ramban rejects Rambam's distinction between the tzaddik and the beinoni, but in other places he accepts it. And the answer is that even though Ramban does distinguish between the chassid and the beinoni, like Rambam, it's not the same distinction as the Rambam, because for the Rambam that distinction is naturalistic, whereas for the Ramban it's supernaturalistic. But we still have the second question, which is the Ramban in some places denies the existence of Teva entirely, and in other places seems to acknowledge the existence of Teva. So I think the answer to that question is to understand the following, that when someone is unworthy of special divine protection, then they are left to Teva, according to the Ramban, as a form of punishment. It is abandonment. The Ramban's lashon is that they are ne'azav lemikrim. They are ne'azav. They are abandoned lemikrim to mikra. He uses the word teva in one place as well, but they're abandoned to teva, meaning to say, teva is not this overarching power, but rather there is a conscious decision to leave someone who is unworthy of Hashgacha to Teva. So this solution accords with Bereshis Yud Ches and his commentary on Eov, insofar as it acknowledges the existence of Teva with respect to the distinction between the Beinoni and the Tzaddik, but it also doesn't contradict Shmos, Yud Beis, and Drashas Tars Hashem Tamima, because Teva is not really the status quo. In a certain sense, it's the opposite. Nisim are the status quo. Teva is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides to leave a person to Teva because they're unworthy and undeserving of Nisim. In a certain sense, we could say that the modus operandi is Nisim, is activist intervention, though because most people may not qualify as tzaddikim and therefore are unworthy of this hashgacha, so then they're left to Teva, but Teva is a deviation from the norm, it's not the norm. So, whereas for Rambam, the norm is olam kiminhago noheg, and the exception is hashgacha, for Ramban, the norm is hashgacha, and the exception is Teva. And even though, in practical terms, the exception might be very common, because after all, most people aren't tzaddikim gemurim or rishayim gemurim. Nevertheless, from a conceptual perspective, it's the exception, it's not the rule. And thus, I think, it accords with both or all the passages we saw. Now, you could object. You could say, no, this doesn't work with, let's say, the Ramban in Shmos. There he writes, She'en la'adam chelek b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu ad she'na'amin b'chol devareinu u'mikreinu she'kulam nisim en ba'am tava u'minhago shalolam. Which really sounds like there's no tava at all. And I agree that taken alone, this line does appear to contradict our theory. But I think taken in context, it doesn't. And proof for this could be seen, again, in the Drashas Tars Hashem Tamima, which we read last time. There he uses almost the identical Lashon as he does in Sefer Shmos. But he writes the following. He adds the following. Ki im nomar she'atava hu mechalkel hakol v'hu hapoel ba'olam lomeis adam v'lo chaya ba'avur z'chus ochova. If we were to say that Teva sustains everything and is the only operator in the world, so then nobody would live a long life or die prematurely due to their worthiness or unworthiness. V'achar she'namin ki akel hechris zeha over b'terem bo yamus yomo b'teva. Once you, let's say, acknowledge the existence of something like Misa Bidei Shamayim, so then, Hine Yada Shamas Sazos, Vishina Sateva Kakrias Yamsov, Lifnei Eduso Vitvias Oiva Vitoch. In other words, there's no real difference between Misa Bidei Shamayim for someone who eats, for Zar who eats Truma, and Kriyas Yamsov. In both cases, the rules of Teva have been broken. What difference does it make if it's the rule of Teva that states that there's gravity, or the rule of Teva that states that there's no association between behavior, or between Truma and lifespan? In both cases, the laws of Teva are equally broken. Of course, there's a difference in the sense that there's deniability with respect to one and not with respect to the other, but on a conceptual, on a fundamental level, there's no difference. Now, the Ramban says that this proves his theory. And the Ramban adds that therefore anyone who prays for success in business is clearly acknowledging what I'm saying. Because again, on a natural level, within the world of Teva, there's no association between prayer and success in business. So if you do pray for success in business, presumably you're praying because you believe in the efficacy of prayer, so then my theory is right. Now, again, if you claim that what the Ramban is saying in Shmos and in Drash Tars Hashem Tamima is that there's no such thing as Teva at all, and the view that he's rejecting is the view that says that there is any teva, so then he hasn't proven his point, because one could still say that there's generally teva, but there's sometimes intervention which would allow for misa b'dei shamayim, which would allow for the efficacy of tefilos. But what does the Ramban say? He says, no, I'm going to prove my point that there's no such thing as teva from the fact that we daven, from the fact that there's misa b'dei shamayim. Now, I think that shows that when he says there's no such thing as teva, he doesn't mean there's no such thing as teva, because misa b'dei shamayim and tefilos don't prove that. Rather, what he means is that teva is not the norm. However, teva might still be the exception. But since teva is not the norm, so then there's things like misa b'dei shamayim. Then there's things like the efficacy of tefila. And that's the lashon, I think, is meduyuk that way. Because when he rejects teva, he writes that, again, kiyim no marsha teva hu michal kelakol hu poel ba'olam, then there's no such thing as misa b'dei shamayim. So what's he rejecting? He's rejecting that teva is michal kelakol. He's rejecting that teva is hapoel ba'olam. He's not rejecting the existence of teva entirely. And that's why, as we noted last week, he's able to prove his theory from the existence of miracles. Because miracles show that God is aware of even the smallest details and able to intervene when he so chooses, and does in fact intervene. Which again doesn't prove that there's no such thing as teva, but yet the Ramban told us that his entire theory is based off of the existence of nisim, nisim galuyim, as well as nisim nistarim, like the Yehudim of the Torah. Oh. So I think that's the pshat in the Ramban. Now then the Ramban goes ahead, if we continue in Drash Tars HaShemima, as we noted last week, he criticizes the Ramban. Now, why does he object to Rambam so forcefully? After all, Rambam also agrees that there are Nisim, and Rambam also agrees there's Teva. And Ramban agrees that there's Nisim, and Ramban agrees there's Teva. So why such a forceful rejection? So the Ramban explains why he rejects this. I think we read this last week, so we don't have this all from the Drash Tars HaShem Tamima, which you have in your seats. Again, everything we've been reading, it's page 29 going on to 30. And the Ramban says that the Rambam got it wrong because shehu migareya hanisim umagbir hateva, meaning to say he minimizes nisim and he maximizes teva. For example, in Shmona Prakim, Rambam writes that nisim are built into the fabric of nature. He explains this is what Chazal meant when he says the various nisim like Bilam's donkey and the like were all created by Hashmashos. That means that nisim are not, in a certain sense, deviations from nature, but are built into the fabric of nature. In the Mor Nevuchim 2:29, he rejects that theory, though again he does accept it in Shmona Prakim. In Mor Nevuchim, he thinks that's strange. He agrees that it is one view in Chazal. He says that is what Chazal mean in that Mishnah. But he doesn't think that's the mainstream view. There he says that nisim do exist, but they are they're temporary deviations from nature. They're not the norm, like we said. They're the exception. Normally, the world functions with darko shel olam and minhago shel olam, and occasionally, like at Kriyas Yamsuf, Hashem intervenes. And what the Ramban is saying is that you see from the Rambam this tendency to be migareya hanisim umagbir hateva, meaning to say, whichever theory Rambam accepts, there's a attempt to minimize the existence of nisim. So the Rambam does not deny nisim. Of course, the Rambam accepts that there are nisim. Kriyas Yamsuf is certainly a nes, but to the extent possible, Rambam minimizes nisim, and Ramban says that perspective is absolutely antithetical to that of the Torah, because adaraba, like we've been saying, the norm is nisim. The exception is teva. It might be an exception that's very, very, very common, maybe even more common than the norm. But conceptually, it's the exception. So you would never have the tendency to minimize miracles, because why would anyone attempt to minimize that which is the norm and maximize that which is the exception? And that's his objection to the Rambam. And that's why the Ramban over there, also in Drashas Hashitar Hashem Tamima, says that the Rambam is absolutely wrong with respect to his approach to Yemos HaMashiach. The Rambam very famously says in a number of places, especially at the end of Hilchos Malachim, that don't think that nature will change in the Messianic era. And he quotes Shmuel, Ein Ben Olam Hazeh L'Mos HaMashiach, El Hashibud Malchios Bilvad. What will change is changes political. In the Messianic era, there'll be universal recognition of God. The world will be full of wisdom. Umala haaretz de'as Hashem k'mayim liyam mechasim. But nature will not change. I, the psukim that discuss the lion dwelling with the leopard, no, those are mashalim. The mashal is that nations that have, until this point, always been enemies, like the lion and the lamb, will now live together peacefully and harmoniously. The one of the czars, later czars in Russia, had messianic pretensions. So in the Central Zoo in St. Petersburg, there was a cage with a lion together with a lamb. So somebody once asked the zookeeper, you know, what's going on here? How do you do this? So he says, well, I start off every day with two lambs. So the Rambam says that these visions, these prophecies are mashalim. The truth is that the Ramban acknowledges this might be two opinions in Chazal and the like, but the Ramban says that really the Rambam's absolutely wrong. Why is he wrong? Because there'll be no need for Teva B'Yemos HaMashiach. Why is there no need for Teva? Because Teva serves a particular role nowadays. One function of Teva, this idea is explained by Ramchal and Maral extensively, that Teva is to hide HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lahalim, that's the word where Olam comes from, to hide HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence, and Hashkacha, it's Hester Panim, to allow for free will, to allow for the carrying out of God's plans, and the like. But in the Messianic era, when we will have achieved Shleimus, and we'll live in a world of Vayomahu Yashem Echad Ushmo Echad, where there's universal recognition of God and the like, then there'll be no need anymore for Teva, there'll be no need to hide HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashkacha and Hanhaga. And therefore, why, and moreover, B'Yemos HaMashiach, when people, at least according to Ramban, are tzaddikim and the like, so they'll be zocha to this high level of hashkacha. And the truth is, as we'll see in a couple minutes, even not during the Messianic era, if the entire Jewish nation acts properly, then they will be zocha as a nation to this high level of hashkacha. So, like the Pesukim describe in Bechukosai and the like. So, why would there be any need for Teva, for Minhago Shalolam B'Yemos HaMashiach? And that's why the Rambam's totally wrong. The Rambam, like we said before, sees Teva, Minhag Shalolam, as the norm. So, there's no reason why that would change B'Yemos HaMashiach. Miracles are a temporary deviation. The Rambam says there might be miracles in the process of the coming of Mashiach, but fundamentally nature will not change during the Messianic era. And the Rambam explains very simply why that is. Because to change nature, to change the laws of nature, would imply a flaw in the original plan, right? What happens if I make a correction? I go ahead, I make a machine, or I write a program, and then I change it. It's because, presumably, that there was a flaw in the original design. So that flaw needs to be corrected. And therefore, the Rambam writes, V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to change the laws of nature or revoke the laws of nature in the Messianic era would imply a flaw, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have made a mistake, which needs a correction. However, the Ramban says, no, not at all. That reflects your view, Rambam, whereby nature is the norm, and therefore, were it to be the case that in the Messianic era there was no longer going to be nature, so that would reflect a change in the norm, which would imply a mistake, which is problematic. But it's not true, Rambam, because even nowadays, nature is not the norm. Nature is the exception. Maybe, again, a very common exception, but still an exception. So there's no need for that exception in the Messianic era. And therefore, of course, the laws of nature will change in the Messianic era. And in fact, the Ramban writes that the truth is that nature was not part of the original plan. If you go ahead and look at the descriptions of Gan Eden before the kilkel that resulted in the chait, then the world was different. For example, the Ramban writes that let's say we were to literally understand the psukim in Bechukosai that say that wild animals will not be dangerous when we're all doing what's right, or certainly B'Yemos HaMashiach. So the Ramban writes, that's not a change in the law of nature. Actually, that was the way nature originally was when Adam HaRishon was in Eden, before the Chait. So he would not have been attacked by a lion. Lions attacking humans is a reflection of their degradation and their diminution with respect to their spiritual status that was a result of their chait. And Mimela, B'Yemos HaMashiach, when we will have rectified that chait, so naturally the world will revert to the way it originally was, whereby lions don't attack. And that's the yesod of Ramban's critique against Rambam. And, you know, okay. And that's why it's not, the reversal of nature isn't a reflection of a mistake. We'll just see one more, I see a bunch of questions. One more makor of a Rishon that says what I said, I think, explicitly. I think this is what the Ramban holds. But one Rishon that says explicitly, and I think it does appear in other Rishonim as well, including the Rabbeinu Bachi and the like. But this is in the Meiri, and it's somewhere in your sheets, but now I lost the place. Anyway, I'll read it to you. 31? Okay, great. 31, yeah. The Meiri and Sota. There it is. Meiri and Sota. Shkayach. Middle of page 31. So Mipino Sadas Umei Yisod Doseha Hu Lahamin Biyosher Mishpatei Hashem Yisparach Lios Adam Nigmal V'Ne'enash B'chol Inyanav Lefi Ma'asav Im Tov V'imra V'lo Ya'akev Zem Mazal U'marechas Kochavim. Right? Nature, astrology, all this doesn't affect God's giving God's justice. But sometimes a person is abandoned to mikra or to mazal when he's not worthy based off of his actions of reward or punishment. This abandonment, this forsaking to nature is also considered an onesh. Al tzad hipakah gemul b'makom shaya adam ra'ui le'asos pu'los u'yos l'gemul. Right? Because he was worthy and capable of hashkacha, and because of his chatayim, he is abandoned to graft. Okay. Yes.
I still don't understand how we're defining the terms conceptually for the Ramban, Mikra versus
Mikra is nature. There is such a thing as
natural according to the Ramban.
Yes, but Hashem sets up. It's true. It's all from Hashem, and actually, I'd like to elaborate upon that in 1 minute after I take these questions. But you're correct. It's all from Hashem. And there are different hanhagos by which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is manhig the olam. One is interventionist, and one is, if you're unworthy of that hanhaga, HaKadosh Baruch Hu leaves you to mikra. So mikra is something that exists. It's a system that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, and he places a person in that ma'areches if they're unworthy of hashgacha, or hashgacha pratis, or constant hashgacha pratis. So it does exist, and it's a means by which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is manig the world. But lemaisa, what that means is that when someone is abandoned to nature, so then they're subject to nature, which would mean that random things happen to them.
But we hold nis and nistar in this.
No, not everything is a nes nistar. You have to be zocha to a nes nistar. That's what the Ramban says. What are nisim nistarim? We'll define nisim nistarim in just a minute. Nisim nistarim are the yehudim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to Klal Yisrael when they are shomer Torah mitzvos. Nisim nistarim are the means by which HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects chasidim. Right? That's nisim nistarim.
Everything's nisim.
No! Everything. So that's the yisod that I'm saying. Fundamentally, everything is nisim.
In an ideal world?
No, not even an ideal world. Fundamentally, that's true, because everything is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides to leave a person to teva.
That's a nis. That's right.
That is the exception. When he says everything is nisim, he means to say that the norm is hashkacha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created teva as well, and he leaves people to teva should they be deserving of that. And again, I grant you, and maybe this pshat is wrong, I'm not sure, it's that line does not sound like what I'm saying. What I'm arguing is that the context of that line, not just the other Rambans, but even that line, that shtickel, if you look at Rosh Hashanah Tamima, indicates that what he means when he says everything is nisim does not mean to say that there's no teva. It's not the case that everything is nisim nistarim according to the Ramban. That's clear. He says chasidim get nisim nistarim. It means that nisim nistarim are the norm, but there's an exception. Somebody's unworthy of nisim nistarim, they're left to teva. If you're left to teva, what does that mean? That means that when somebody trips and scrapes their knee, so that's not necessarily because there was a gzeira from on high that he should trip and scrape his knee. It's because of teva. It's because of the way he tied his shoelaces this morning, or the way the wind blew, or all that. That exists. Who exists in the world of teva? Beinonim, unworthy of even nisim nistarim. Yes?
So imagine that if something is the norm, that will be changed.
Uh-huh.
It's an interesting question.
What you're arguing is that there are two stages, and the second stage calls for different things, and the change doesn't imply a flaw. When we talk about Yemos HaMashiach, we'll talk about that. It's an interesting question. But the Rambam basically says that God, in his perfection, created the greatest conceivable world, which does not need two stages with a correction for a new reality, but rather one that is a single world that is perfect at all times. So correctives are needed with respect in a temporary sense.
So
I mean, in the same event that under Ramban, you could have both things. Let's say somebody, it's a terrible accident, and miraculously you survive. So, you know, it's thanks but not thanks. In other words, I'm a tzaddik, therefore I miraculously survived against nature, but why did I get into the accident?
Maybe, or maybe, I mean, maybe you're right, or maybe you got into the accident. It was also hashkacha. It was hashkacha that you're supposed to get into the terrible accident and be saved. But you're right. In other words, even according to the Ramban, like we said for the Rambam, a person doesn't necessarily know the anhaga that they're experiencing at all times. I can't, unless I'm a tzaddik gamor, I can't necessarily say that the scrape on my knee occurred as an onesh. But I can say it in the sense that even if it's teva, teva is an onesh, and therefore the scrape of my knee did happen because of an onesh. It's either teva or hashkacha. Either way, it's an onesh. If it's a miracle, so then it's a miracle, right?
It's combining the same action.
And a chanami.
Teva as a punishment, wouldn't that open for the possibility of a punishment that doesn't necessarily fit the crime?
No, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu would presumably ensure that that doesn't happen because of the constant hashkacha. But in a certain sense, you're right. We're going to talk about that later today, in theory, which is an idea that you have called hashkacha klalis. What does hashkacha klalis mean? So we find the term hashkacha klalis used sort of in two contexts. Both are very important. Sometimes, you'll see in the Rishonim, the term hashkacha klalis is the hashkacha for the min, for the species. Like, there's hashkacha klalis on animals, though there's no hashkacha pratis. The preservation of the min, but not any hashkacha to the individual. Sometimes hashkacha klalis means something else, which is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu might go ahead and certain wicked people are on a ship, and for that reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to bring a terrible storm, and so now there's an incredible storm. And everybody else will now suffer due to that storm unless they merit to be saved through supernatural intervention. Which means that someone who isn't a tzaddik gamor, zocha to the Yeshua of Hashem, might drown in that shipwreck. The shipwreck. And that's hashkacha klalis, because it's something that's addressed to the klal, but will sweep away tzaddikim as well if they're not worthy of protection. That's what Chazal mean when they say kevan shenitan reshus lemashchis eino mavchin bein tzaddik l'rasha. Tzaddik there doesn't mean the tzaddik gamor. The tzaddik gamor is nothing to worry about, but it means that since there is a need for there to be a certain thing to happen in the world, let's say a disease, a plague. So unless there's a reason for that. That is hashkacha. But nevertheless, because that's happening, unless you're someone who is zocha, who's deserving of a special nes, so you'll be swallowed up in that. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will still ensure that there's justice, but what does it mean then? How could that be? If this person was a tzaddik and he didn't really deserve to be killed in the plague, why is he killed in the plague? So the answer is very simple. That on its own, his actions would not warrant dying at this point. He's deserving of death. Otherwise, Hashem wouldn't allow him to die. But on his own, his actions would not warrant being killed in a plague now. But because Hashem sees a need for a plague at this point in this place, and the tzaddik is here, so he too will be swept up in it unless he is deserving of a Yeshua. If you take a look at the Ran page 27 in Drash Zeran, we can't read it inside now, But he makes this point to explain a very fascinating bunch of mitzvos. Right? Why is it that we have so many mitzvos in which we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for being saved during Makas Bechoros? Right? Pidyon HaBen and the like. I don't understand. Right? Kili b'nei Yisrael when Bakosias Bechori Mitzrayim. Right? Why should we be thankful? The Jewish people shouldn't have been killed. Right? Go ahead. You know, we live in the Trump era. So my next door neighbor, the FBI shows up and deports them for being an illegal alien. Okay. So now, Baruch Hashem, they didn't take me. And I'll make a big sudas hodaya. I don't need to thank Hashem for that. I'm a citizen. I can thank Hashem for being a citizen. But there's no nays that they didn't come and deport me. I'm a legal citizen, right? If I was also an illegal alien and they took them and not me, okay, that's right. So why are we so thankful that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't kill us along with the Bechorim? So the answer is, the Ran says, no. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in Makas Bechoros, in general, he doesn't just poof, like, do everything super. Even the Makos, like we talked about before, even Kriyas Yamsuf was through a powerful wind. Even the Makos were through some natural mechanism. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu apparently went ahead and created some type of disease that affected firstborns. We mentioned this when we did Pshat and Drash, I think, in the first Zman. He made some type of disease that affected firstborns. Memela should have affected the Jews. It didn't affect the Jews. Oh, for that they have tremendous Hakar Sato. Right. But otherwise, they would have been swept up, even though they, on their own, it was not warranted that they die in a plague now. But, nevertheless, since they really weren't deserving of that supernatural intervention, they would have been swept up. Now, if they weren't deserving of death at all, they wouldn't have been killed. But they shouldn't have died now, even though they're worthy of death, right? Not everybody who's worthy of death dies instantaneously. So even though they were worthy of death, they shouldn't have died now, but they would have died now due to the supernatural intervention, and they were saved. And for that, there's tremendous HaKadosh HaTov. And that's what Hashgacha Klalis means. It's a reflection of Eino Mavchen Bein Tzadik L'Rasha, when Nitan Rishus L'Mashkes. So in the end of the day, what comes out is that Avada and Avada, nobody's ever unjustly punished through Teva. However, even though that's true, it is sometimes the case that due to Teva, you'll experience pain and suffering and even death that you would not have otherwise had experienced at this point in time were HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be manig the world exclusively through direct providence. Now, I want to go back to the point Shmuel said, and it's good that we're out of time, because I can't really explain this to you anyway, because I don't understand it myself. But the Ramban, it's more deep than what I'm saying, which is that when the Ramban distinguishes between Nisim Nistarim and Nisim Geluyim, it's not just, for Tzadikim, it's Nisim Nistarim, and for everybody, and occasionally it's Nisim Geluyim, and It reflects different tanhagos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Ramban writes that the Shem Havaya is the name referring to Nisim Gluyim, right? Like it says at the beginning, as opposed to Kel Shakai, which is Nisim Nistarim, right? Shmi Hashem Lo Nodati Lahem, only Kel Shakai. So Nisim Nistarim, he says, relates to the lowest of the Sfiros, the Sfira of Malchus, whereas the Nisim Geluyim relate to the sphere of Tiferes, which is the third of the seven spheros, not the ten. And I guess we're not going to talk about spheros now, but it's good because we really shouldn't be talking about this stuff anyway. But the truth is that, like much of Ramban's theology, to really understand what he says, you need to also understand his Kabbalah. And that's why when Ramban distinguishes between Nisim Galuyim and Nisim Nistam and the like, he does use Kabbalistic terminology to explain this. That's an Ein Lanu Esek Ben Hastaro, so we're not going to do that now. But Lemaisa, that does address, that's part of this. What we tried to explain today, I think, is the idea of the Ramban in non-mystical terms, but really to understand this, you do have to read his Kabbalah as well. Okay, there's much more to say in Ramban, but we're out of time, and I want to go on next week to other thinkers and finish up the Sugya of Hashgacha so we can go on.
So the fact that